for listening to the Geek Out Loud podcast, the official podcast of geekoutonline.com. Short Circuit 2 was the movie. Johnny Five was the character, and he quoted a man who said, "It's frantic, it's manic, it's manic." That's what I feel like this episode of Geek Out Loud is. Everyone, and welcome to Geek Out Loud, the official podcast of geekoutonline.com. I can say that because music is playing in my ear. I can say that because, well, if you go to geekoutonline.com right now, the very first post you should see is our March Madness-ish post where you can download the brackets, or the bracket, rather, for the official bracket for March Madness-ish 2024. This is going to be nothing we've ever done before and will never, ever do again. We are taking our time. This has been, I have pulled out hair. I have wept over people's choices. I have been absolutely just blown away. I have received criticisms. That's fine. I don't mind receiving the criticisms because I'm always able to say I didn't make the choice. So this is where we're at. It's now time to get into this bad boy. We're going to determine, according to the Geek Out Loud universe, the Goliverse, as it were, what is the best, greatest movie score of all time. There are four divisions. They are as such. Comedy slash other, which we will be getting into on this particular episode. Drama slash thriller, which will be coming on a future episode. Action adventure, which will be coming on yet another future episode. And sci-fi and fantasy, which will be coming on yet another future episode. We have done episodes wherein we have narrowed down certain categories to try to get. There were 190 total films submitted, film scores submitted. Out of those, we began eliminations. We, on an episode you'll remember, we did Best Superhero, Best Star Wars. We started with Best Animated. We continued that through online voting at the Goliverse group, the Guardians of the Goliverse Facebook group, and Twitter. I'm going to talk about that in a minute because there were some interesting things to come out of those votes and those competitions. And then once we got as narrowed down with things as we could, Big Papa Steve stepped in and said, "All right, it's time to make some executive decisions." And yes, I became, much like the NCAA College Football Committee, the playoff committee, I made some hard, difficult choices and some hard calls. I say that really narrowing things down was a huge help, because as we get into the bracket in a moment, we'll talk about how these particular scores made it to the bracket. Some of them made it through the voting of you, the audience, through Twitter and Facebook. Now, some of you may be listening to me like, "Well, I don't use X/Twitter. I don't go on Facebook. How do I get to vote?" Well, you either show up live in the chat or you use those things. That's the only way I had to go. No one emailed in saying what they thought their idea was, you know. So that's where we're at on those bad boys. If I feel like I'm coming off a little aggressive, it's because maybe I am. maybe we stop being friends. By the way, that's a great segue. That Boss Nass is a great segue into telling you what Dave Jones and I just recorded for the Patreon Movies with Steve and Dave. March was Dave's birthday month, and one of Dave's favorite movies of all time is Flash Gordon. So we watched Flash Gordon together. About, I don't know, 2 minutes in, I realized I don't think I've ever seen Flash Gordon. So I thought I had, you know, but I think I just had memories of like clips and bits and pieces, and of course the music. So what happens is we watch Flash Gordon and don't say a whole lot. So that's coming up to Patreon. I do have a lot. I do have things to say about Flash Gordon, and Dave is very informational on it. There's a lot of Googling that takes place. Hopefully you'll enjoy it coming up on the Patreon. We appreciate everyone who supports us over at Patreon, patreon.com/geekoutloud. The reason I say Boss Nass is a segue in that because the guy who played Boss Nass, whose name I cannot think of right now off the top of my head, plays like the leader of the Hawkmen in Flash Gordon. And how about those Hawkmen, ladies and gentlemen? They're something else. Also, the Lizard Men are what really tripped me out. It's like the Lizard Men in Flash Gordon looked like some kid tried to make their own Sleestak back in the day, and they put that in the movie. We talk about why all that is as we're watching, and unfortunately, I don't know, has the movie and the subsequent unsuccessful television show on the Sci-Fi Network starring Eric Fordman, who played Whitney on Smallville, or his name was Whitney Fordman. His name's not Eric Fordman. It was Whitney Fordman. Whitney! Has that given no opportunity for there to be another go at the Flash Gordon genre? We try to discuss a Flash Gordon cinematic universe, what that would entail, but we've gotten that before with the 80s cartoon Defenders of the Earth, which tries to have a really cool theme song, but it doesn't quite have a really cool theme song, does Defenders of the Earth, which brings me to the next competition we'll do next year will be the animated themes. That's what we meant to do this year, what we had originally talked about doing this year, but next year we'll do that. Brian Blessed is his name. Thank you, Rifen.
Hey, why don't you know Brian Blessed? Everyone knows that's Boss Nass. You know, Boss Nass is probably one of the greatest characters ever created by George Lucas. He's not a great character. He's not a great character, but you think about this man who's having to take charge of this entire civilization of creatures and what he has to do to defend his home and how much he is so he's essential to the story of Star Wars. We must have more Boss Nass.
Scott Rifen does not say that, and that is a poor representation of who Scott is and what Scott believes. So
Boss Nass was on the wheel.
Eric Johnson played Whitney in Smallville. I don't know why I'm saying Whitney that way. Whitney! But that's who's going on. So anyway, that's what's happening on Patreon. We appreciate all your support at Patreon. Also, right now over at Patreon is the first episode of the Petra Show. Petra means rock out loud. And we go over the first, the royal we. We go over the first Petra album. I kind of tell my story of how I got into it. Working on research and the script for the second one right now, for the second album called Come and Join Us. And I got to tell you, right out of the gate, I stumbled into something that sent me down a rabbit hole I did not think I'd be going on when it came to Petra. So if you want to know the connection between Scooby-Doo and Petra, Patreon coming soon, the second album, Come and Join Us. Really, honestly, you thought, or I thought, that the whole connection, any thread that we would follow would be the God gave rock and roll to you thread. But no, it ended up being the Scooby-Doo thing right now. So we'll get into that. Want to thank everyone who's joined us right now live in the chat at mixer.com/Golaverse. You guys are going to be integral in helping out with the selections on these brackets and what happens in these competitions as we narrow down the best movie score ever, according to the greatest podcast listening audience in the universe, the Geek Out Loud universe, the Golaverse. And I'm looking forward to getting into this. I have done actual work with this, so that's new. I have realized some things. I've learned a lot of things I didn't know. That's been one of the exciting things to come out of this whole deal is there are movies that I have sat down to begin to watch that I haven't finished watching. There is music that I've never paid attention to that I'm paying more close attention to. There is, it's just a great time. And then I realized, oh, I've got to put all this together in a show. Now, that's all we got right now. My fiddle toy of choice was going to be a vintage removable limb C-3PO, but I left him on the shelf way on the other side of the room. So my fiddle toy of choice today is most likely going to be either a Marvel Select Hulk or the G.I. Joe Classified Sergeant Slaughter or the Mythic Legion's Poxus Wave Wizard Man, whose name I do not know right off the top of my head. Let me find out who it is. I can't read that. It's too small. Give me a second here. You know what? I'm not going to do that. Why? This is one of the things I've realized I've done, and this is one of the reasons I've tried to put some preparation into the show, is I have realized that I've gotten so lax. I've gone past mediocrity, and I have dipped well below. This podcast has become subpar because I've gotten so comfortable with you, the chat, and the listening audience just, you know, treating me so kindly that I have allowed myself to get distracted and to be just absolutely be like a dog chasing a squirrel. You know, I'm totally zoned in, and then all of a sudden my eyes will catch something, and I'll be like, oh, I gotta talk about that, or I gotta do this, and then I'll get to Googling, and there's just like seconds and seconds and seconds of silence where all you hear is keyboard clacking, and you hear me going, and it's like, who wants to listen to, a Spider-Man, retro Spider-Man, I forgot about him, I could open him up while on the show. Six different hands. The web wing things, his paint scheme's very much like the first appearance Spider-Man. So it's like a darker blue, but it's got that big spider on the front, kind of a Ditko-esque look to him. Steven Ditko, that is. He would have been a great addition to SteveCon, but alas, he's no longer with us. Ditko did Spider-Man. He also did Doctor Strange. That Doctor Strange man literally has an upside down triangle shaped head when you look at the old Doctor Strange. He is a sight to behold, man. Old Stephen Strange. He's another one that could come to SteveCon if he were real, but he's not. But he is a Stephen. Stephen Strange. What if that's how he talked? I'm Stephen Strange. I'm Doctor Strange. I am the master of the mystic arts. And today, by the hoary host of Hogoth. The crimson bands of Cesarek will bind thee. What are some other things Doctor Strange said? He had some fun things that he would say in his lifetime. Let me Google that real quick. Let's see here. Doctor Strange sayings? Let's see what it has to say. No, let's see. The famous dialogue of Doctor Strange. No, that's from the movie. That's MCU. What? No, I don't want quotes from the movie Doctor Strange. I want what would you call those catchphrases? Doctor Strange catchphrases. Catchphrases. Maybe the chat can help. Doctor Strange catchphrases. What is Doctor Strange's iconic line? Nah, not Dormammu, I've come to bargain. Dormammu, I've come to bargain. Doctor Strange, silliest catchphrases and spells. This is from Ranker.com. Yeah, there it is. Oh, by the hoary host of Hogoth. I said that. By the eye of Agamotto, the crimson band of Satarak, by the mystic moons of Munipur, the wondrous wands of Watoom, the ruby rings of Ragador, by the vapors of the Vashanti, by the flames of the flawless fault line, oh, good night, in the name of the dread Dormammu, by the shades of the seraphim. I think I sound like the guy who's marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today. Marriage, that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream. By the omnipotent Ashtar, the vapors of Valtor, the fires of Ixalan. All right. So, okay. But that's what I don't want the show to be. You see, like, just ridiculousness. Just me doing that kind of stuff that totally derails the show, totally takes us right off the rails into something that does not matter, and then I start umming and ahhing and Googling and saying words real slow as I Google, and then by the time I get to the bit, it's taken way too long, you know? And so, because of these things, I'm out. No, because of these things, the show has become subpar. It's not as good as it used to be. It's why I'm not being invited to be on Rebel Force Radio anymore. It's why Scott Rifen doesn't want to have anything to do with Geek Out Loud anymore. I can't get Shaz on the phone. He's embarrassed to even say he's my friend. It's one of those things. Now, speaking of Rifen in the chat, he says, I thought the whale was back. You're talking about Bobby the Blue Whale. Bobby the Blue Whale has been mad at me ever since we canceled the Big Honkin' Show. And what I didn't realize is that Bobby was a little bit of a geek, and he was always trying to get in on Geek Out Loud, and I never quite caught that. So maybe we'll get him in on some of it. Maybe the music will bring the whale back, you know, the songs and that sort of thing. So speaking of the music, 190 scores were submitted. Somehow we got that narrowed down to 64 in four different divisions. Now, the way that happened, as I said out in the outset, we did some voting. We narrowed down. For example, there were two different Harry Potter scores that were submitted, so I just put those to a vote. And the winning score made the bracket. Same thing with Star Trek. Four different Star Trek scores that were available. I put those up for a vote. We walked through. There were actually some places where there were similar movie scores, not as far as like their sound, but like their content and that sort of thing, that I was able to say to do many tournaments, you know, over the course of like a week or two, where we were able to narrow things down and knock off 3, 4, 8, you know, sometimes 15 movies at a clip, thanks to you guys who were voting and on the Guardians of the Gulliverse Facebook page and over at X, formerly Twitter. What do we call that now? I know I'm not the first person to say that and ask that question. I don't like calling it X. It feels weird. I never liked Twitter in the first place. Still don't really care for it, but it was a big help. One of the things that was really interesting was to see the differences between the voting in the Guardians of the Gulliverse group and the people following Geek Out Loud on X, formerly Twitter, is because the X votes. There were times when there would be a score that would win on the Guardians page, but it would not win on the Twitter page. And so I had to actually kind of add up all the votes to see which actually came out on top. And there was one or two instances where there was such an overwhelming win on one or the other that it did not matter how badly it lost on one or the other, that one would end up winning. And then there were times where, you know, it didn't matter, but and so that's why if you look at some of the polls and stuff on either one of these places, there may be a different winner out of that. It's because when you do all the math, it panned out this way. So I was told there'd be no math, but there is. So that's what happened. Then there were a few times where it was like, you know what, this just isn't going to work. There's no way this is going to happen. And I'll give you an example of one. I can't even pronounce it, but it's a Philip Glass score to a documentary called Koyaanisqatsi. I'd never heard of it. I'd never heard of the documentary. I looked it up. I listened to the score, and this listening to the score, I realized this will not stand. It's unique. It's fitting. It's real tonal, you know, and it's fitting for what the documentary was. I watched bits and pieces of that to kind of get an idea of what was going on there. But there's just no way that it was going to stand up to the likes of a Hans Zimmer, Danny Elfman, James Horner, Jerry Goldsmith, John Williams, Howard Shore. And so I just made the decision to take that one off and I give it an honorable mention because I had to take it away. There were other things where, again, I just knew, for example, the Joker, and it was done by Hildur Governator. Really a percussive score and had a real shining feel in other places to it. And it carries the tension and the sadness of what's going on in the movie. But again, I think if you put it up against some of those other films that were in the division with it, it just, and it was in the drama thriller division, it just wouldn't have, it wasn't going to make it past some of those. So that's what was going on. Jeff Lane says, pronounce it like Dr. Strange. By the capers of Koyaanisqatsi. Here's an example of one that won on Twitter but did not overcome the numbers on the Facebook page, and that was The Wrath of Khan. I was really surprised by that. Of all the Star Trek scores, I believe it was actually the motion picture that ends up winning. But Wrath of Khan won enough over on X, formerly Twitter, but not on Facebook. And so I hated to see that one go. Star Trek 2009 by Michael Giacchino. By the way, listen, I know it's Giacchino or Giacchino. I understand, okay? And I went Giacchino is what it is. It's not Giacchino. It's Giacchino. I get it. Don't call me to task on my pronunciation. Just don't do that. We're going to have fun. We're going to call him M. Night Shyamalan. We're going to say Giacchino, Cappuccino, Kia. You can call me Glosson. You know, like, it's fine. We're not, we're just doing this stuff. So, but the Michael Giacchino score for Star Trek 2009 is really a great score. But, you know, you, the listener, thought, hey, it can't meet up to the original film. So we went through some golden era of cinema films. There were 16 of those, and I was absolutely shocked at what won there. Gone with the Wind was my favorite. That's the one I thought would, and by favorite, I mean it was my pick to win that whole little mini category. It did not win. Wizard of Oz beat out Gone with the Wind, and I was absolutely gobsmacked by that. Could not believe it. DF Music in the chat says, Search for Spock is superior to Khan as far as the score goes. Hey, I think the movie is superior to Wrath of Khan, too. There it is. I said it, and that's why this is Geek Out Loud. It's not your mama's Geek Out Loud. It's this Geek Out Loud. So those kind of things happen in the narrowing down of everything. And then once we got to, there was a situation, it got to where what we had in some of these were based on the winning scores, the scores that got enough votes to win, and the scores that were had multiple entries. In other words, there were 190 scores submitted, but there were some scores that were submitted multiple times. For example, the most submitted score of the whole thing, and this is from emails from people emailing in, Superman the movie was submitted 14 times. So, and it was submitted more than any other score that was sent in. Second behind Superman the movie, and I want to make sure I've got this right because I don't want to misspeak. And this was really surprising to me, but second behind Superman the movie was Back to the Future, Alan Silvestri, tied with Raiders of the Lost Ark. Both of those had 12 submissions. Then the big shocker was the number three submitted score. It was a tie between Jurassic Park with 11 and Tron Legacy with 11. And so what I did is I took the scores that had multiple submissions and took those and the ones that had won the individual tournaments. And once we got down to 16 in a category of all those things, we just went ahead and finished out that division and said, here are the 16 for that division. And they were seeded according to the number of submissions they got. So Superman is going to be in the sci-fi fantasy category, and he's the number, and that movie is the number one seed in that category. Now, we did get to where we had equal submissions and that sort of thing. And the way I have them listed on the chart is the way that they came in order of the way they were submitted. And so the seeding then went by when they were submitted. So if a score got submitted later in the submissions process, then it was lower seeded. So that's how the seeding went. That's how the determinations of these things went. There was a lot of voting that went on. There was a lot of learning on my part that went on. And so what I've tried to do, because there was so much work, Jeff Hook got submitted, by the way. The problem is by in its division, I don't think it's actually in the, I don't think it made it because, or did it? Let me double check here because I'm pretty sure it would have been. Yeah, it's number five. It's the number five seed in the action adventure category. So it made it. I lost my point because I looked at the chat. There we go. So what happened, because there was so much work that went into getting these things together, going through the voting process, getting everything narrowed down, I decided we're not just going to take an episode and just blow through and willy-nilly, you know, here's the score versus this score like we've done in the past. I've sat down, you know, haven't done them all yet, you know, but I've sat down with many of these as I can. We're starting in this episode in the comedy slash other category. And so I've sat down with these scores, I've gone through them, and I've picked out what I feel like are highlights from these scores that kind of encapsulate what the score is. A lot of times, if it's an older movie, there may be an overture, or the end credits for most of them will kind of give you a flavor of the whole thing. There will be different things throughout in the movie, you know. So I just listened through the score, and I've timestamped some things. And so I want you to know, as a listener, that the way I want to make this fun for all of us is I've actually put some preparation in. And if you know me, if you've listened to my stuff for any amount of time, you know that's absolutely, you know, not how it goes. I should open that Spider-Man while I'm doing this. Play around with it. No fiddling. We'll do that when I join the Deucecast at 10:30 Eastern, which means we've only got an hour to get through. So we're not going to get through probably even all of round one tonight. We'll get through several matchups on this episode, and we're going to rely on you who are listening live at mixer.com/Goldiverse to just send in your votes. We'll count them up here live as we're doing this thing, and we're going to make it happen. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you, and I don't even know if this is a decent way to introduce this thing. After weeks of accumulating, narrowing down, working it all out, making it all happen the best we can, working together in this thing, I present to you the opening rounds of the Geek Out Loud March-ish, Madness-ish, Bracket-ish tournament. Why are you whispering? That's really scary. This was not at all what I wanted to pick out. No, I'm not doing that. No. That was a bad choice on my part. This is what I get for not actually realizing I needed something to get going before everything kicks up. Oh, my goodness. Maybe this will be it. Ladies and gentlemen, yeah, this is much better. Now, imagine lights going everywhere and all the competitors running out. I don't know how the scores would run out onto the court. Wait, there's another thing I got to say before we get into it. Another thing that happened in preparation, and well, you know what? No, if we get there, I'll make the apology then. But I do owe someone an apology. Here we go. Distracted by the chat, no more. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Steve Glosson, and this is the March-ish, Madness-ish, Bracket-ish, Soundtrack-ish thing. Here we go. All right. I owe an apology to Shaz Bazaar, not to Tenton. Tenton thinks I owe him an apology because of the whole Fall Guy thing from last year. I stand by that. That's just not a great theme. That it does not, it cannot hold up to Magnum PI, cannot hold up to Sanford and Son, cannot hold up to the A team, cannot hold up to the Jeffersons, cannot hold up to Knight Rider, cannot hold up to Smallville. Cannot hold up. Look, I just gave you six. All right. So here we go.
Battle number one.
Okay. Let me. I owe everyone an apology real quick. Give me just a second here. Let me pull it up. I'm really sorry because I should have gone to one of the best voices in radio and podcasting, Scott Rifen, and asked him to do some liners, you know, like round one kind of thing. At the very least, I should have gone like and downloaded the sound effects to something like, you know, Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat or, you know, or a Casey Kasem countdown kind of thing. Number one, you know, kind of deal. But I did not. In all of my preparation, I thought I was doing well. And I realized that, once again, we have dipped way past mediocrity. And, you know, I even heard a comedian talking about doing a set and how there was a give one, take one kind of principle where if he started to riff on something on stage, he had to mentally make a note of that and take away a joke. And I've not done that. This whole episode, it just whatever pops in my mind, I'm going with. I'm going tangent on tangent, and that's not what you're here for. You're here for the music, and I'm sorry. You know, there's a disco version of that song. It's not really a disco version of the song. It kind of is. It's on the Incredible Hulk soundtrack by Joseph Harnell, and you don't really think about it, but it's there. And I want to apologize once again for getting way off track. We should be, you know, elbows deep in Lion King right now, listening to Hans Zimmer music. But instead, I've chosen to do this. Come on, man. Now, if memory serves, there's actually an episode where that gets played as an actual in-universe, on-screen, like they're hearing the music. Anyway, all right. Tinton says, what about the apology? There's no apology for you. I'm not apologizing about the score. I'm apologizing to Shaz, and when I get to the sting, I'll explain why we're apologizing to Shaz. And this is part of what Steve has learned. Through all of this. Really quickly, if Cody Murphy is still with us, Cody Murphy, if he's still with us, Cody, are you still hearing Rock Sugar? That's my question. So, round one, matchup one. Look, these brackets make for strange clashes, and I don't know that there's one any more strange. Not really, but as far as the stylings of music go, I don't know that there's one more strange than this one. It is the number one seeded Lion King versus this is one I'm going to go full transparency, and we needed an extra score for this category, and this is my submission was Police Academy. So this is Lion King versus Police Academy. We're going to begin with there are three or four tracks on the Lion King soundtrack that are not Elton John and are not the musical singing parts from the movie. I've tried to, where we have musicals, not include the singing, but more just the score aspect of them all. And that's what is in view here. This is To Die For, and there's a lot that happens in this. This is a Hans Zimmer score. So this is track number 7 off the Lion King soundtrack. It's To Die For. That is, of course, when you've got the trampling happening, the stampede going on, and all that's going on there. And then as you come over a little bit further in this piece, you get to a little bit softer stuff. Thank you. with the choir coming in and this the sad, sorrowful music. It's almost hymn-like with some of the music there. And of course, what you're hearing is kind of the theme that resonates throughout Hans Zimmer's score there, and it comes back in a big way in one of my favorite tracks from this. This next track we'll take a snippet from and listen to is called Under the Stars. Of course, this would be around the time when I first watched this movie back in the 90s, and I got to hear James Earl Jones say, "You are my son." I'm like, that's the closest we'll ever get to Star Wars again. But this is Under the Stars. I love the choir in this, by the way. You hear the rumble, you hear that little bit of that theme, and then you hear kind of Rafiki's kind of theme coming up, because there's the whole, and then it kicks into this, because the king is getting ready to return. He's headed back. I love the chanting in the back and everything. There's just a celebration to what's happening. And that's kind of how it'll close out. But then, to me, the big dog, the walking dog of this whole soundtrack is, this whole score comes at the end with the King of Pride Rock. This is the fight. This is everything. This is the majestic moment at the end. It's all in there. I didn't want to step all over what Zimmer was doing there at first, because it's just so, that moment is just, it, to me, it's also one of the great cinematic moments as Simba ascends Pride Rock and roars. Reading between the reels in the chat says, Zimmer is far more versatile than most people realize. I'm inclined to agree with you. I'll tell you this as well. I've also noticed where Zimmer also relies on some of the same tricks again and again. There's really an interesting, I watched an interesting YouTube video about the Pirates score and actually why Klaus Badelt is credited with the first score with the movie, with the score of the first movie, and how Hans Zimmer actually kicked in. And then the dude actually showed or played some music from Gladiator next to that Pirates theme that we all know and love. And it was really interesting. I remember the first time in my life when I listened to something and I recognized the composer. I was in college and I hadn't really, look, I never really paid a lot of attention to too much stuff. I was never a big movie buff growing up. I just kind of went wherever the winds carried me basically and had fun. I had a few things that I did that I was pretty passionate about, but nothing like I wasn't able to be a movie buff. You know, we had one movie that would play every week in our town. And so, you know, you were kind of, it wasn't like you could go on a Tuesday night and see a movie you hadn't seen, you know, because it was still playing, or you know, the one that you saw on Friday is still playing, that kind of thing. So, but I walked into my dorm and my roommate was playing some music and it was orchestral music. And I'm like, wow. And I said, what is that? And he said, it's the soundtrack to Far and Away. And I said, who did that? That sounds like John Williams. And he pulled up the CD. It is John Williams. And I was just really, I'm like, oh, look at me. I can recognize John Williams music. And so that's when I first started saying, you know, these guys all have kind of a feel. There's things about them. And John Williams knows how to write a theme, and he knows how to use that theme and thread it through various scores and that sort of thing. Zimmer does the same thing. I mean, I think that's part of scoring a movie is you get two or three, maybe five different themes that, you know, you weave into other pieces throughout the movie. And we'll see that real big in Police Academy here in a moment. Zimmer has apparently like a whole conglomerate of people that work with him and that sort of thing, not taking anything away from his talent. I'm just saying like he is, it's not that they're working for him. I guess he's kind of training them. I don't fully understand it, so I don't want to speak out of turn. But in here in the chat, someone has said, you know, Zimmer has a whole score of people looking. So anyhow, that's Lion King. Lion King is pitted against Robert Folk and the Police Academy. Now, I'll say this, when it comes to a score for a movie, this is very much in its place. This is very much the themes repeat throughout with this. But I want to, let's get a feel right out of the gate. We get a feel for the Police Academy theme. And so that's the opening credits right there. That's the opening main title, you know, as it's coming on, and then it goes into the whole thing. But you'll hear that theme repeated again and again and again in different ways, in different motifs of that theme. You know, sometimes it's played kind of jaunty. Sometimes it's played a little more softly, you know. Sometimes it's played a little more fun, you know, but it's a fun thing. And you really do hear the difference in times. The Lion King is a decade on from the Police Academy score, and Lion King is Hans Zimmer versus Robert Folk. And not taking away anything from Robert Folk, but his name doesn't quite, you know, ring out through the cosmos as one of the great composers of all time. You know, right now people are on a Hans Zimmer high in our society. So this is another piece Police Academy. It's called Join Up. And so you can hear that theme kind of being played. And so you kind of hear how there's different moments where there's something happening, and it, and so the action on screen, like this is when they're all joining up and there's a little bit of a military aspect to it, but then it pans out and it goes right back into the big thing. This track is called SOB. And this is where you get into the part of, a lot of these comedies would have the serious part toward the end, and that's what this is. Especially Police Academy would do this, I'd say. And this has got a real TV. Now, look, I'm a sucker for guitar and orchestral stuff working together. This is very much like a little bit of that 80s TV police show flair kind of thing going on. But it is a departure from what we've heard the whole time in this film. In this movie, you hear a lot of that Police Academy fanfare. You hear a lot of the flutes and the piccolo stuff. You have a lot of the, you know, the more military sounding drums, the snare stuff that's happening. And then when you get on the streets, when you get out of the academy and onto the streets of the city, just called the city, what you find is we get into this grittier, more police drama kind of music, even though it's still a comedy, you know, you get into that. Here is a track called Match. And it's just more of this. And there's the theme right there, you see? Kind of almost a minor key, I guess. So yeah, you have that kind of stuff going on in this, and it's part of what to me makes this score so much fun. You're dealing with these marches and stuff, but not so much now. There is a piece of music that is not scored by Robert Folk that's on this, shouldn't be including this, but you can't when you go to the Blue Oyster Bar, this is a staple in the Police Academy movies. So, and then I'll just to refresh on the theme, here's the Police Academy march. And what you have is that march or that theme, as we heard throughout, most of this score are variations on this march. So, you know, it's definitely an underdog. I think it's a great theme. I think it's a great score for the movie that it's in. My heart wants to go Police Academy over Lion King because those movies, we weren't allowed to watch the first one because it was rated R, but the second and the third one and the fourth one were all like PG. And I'm telling you, those movies were formative to what I thought comedy was. Making weird noises with your mouth and learning how to make laser sounds and, you know, being that smart aleck rebel, but a guy with a, you know, the gold heart, you know, the rebel with a heart of gold, you know, that was Steve Guttenberg. And listen, why is Steve Guttenberg, what happened? That guy deserved, you know, superstar status. And after 3 Men and a Baby, he just kind of fell off the face of the earth. I know he's been back around, but I'm just saying. So I leave it now to you, the chat, Lion King or the Police Academy, you know, that's kind of where we're at. And I feel like I know what's going to win, but we've got to put it to an official vote. Bobcat Goldthwait comes in two, and I think he's the bad guy in two, in terrorizing Sweet Chuck, the jewelry store guy. And then in 3, he joins up. And of course, listen, Bobcat Goldthwait, that character that he played, iconic 80s character. And if you've never seen One Crazy Summer, it's definitely worth your time. He's in that as well. So we've got one for Police Academy. Thank you, Angie. I just feel like that's a pity vote on my behalf. And everything else is Lion King, except for Jeff. He's going Police Academy 2 as well. Lakehead's going. Wow, Troy for Police Academy. Skip in Georgia is Lion King. Lisa's Lion King. So it's 3 for Lion King. DF Music is there too. Gozer Drew is Lion King. John Phillips, Lion King. Reading Between the Reels, Lion King. So a lot of Lion King. Yeah, the nostalgia hit with Police Academy is really what, to me, made that an interesting matchup as I was going through these things, because just listening to these things just brought back that joy and that love. But I'll tell you, when I throw on the King of Pride Rock track and you get the big buildup where you can just see in your mind Simba going up that mountain, you know, the rain coming down, he's just been through that fight. I really do think it's one of the best moments in cinema, not just animated movies. And Hans Zimmer's music there goes with it. It looks like we've got Lion King for the win there in the first round. And this tournament is up and running. Do not make any mistakes, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. We can't do that between every matchup. That can't happen. Now, you want to talk about weird matchups, is this next one. And honestly, this is where, if I'm going to comment on what's going on, I have to tell you, I'm going to be honest about, we're going to find out how much Steve either does or does not like old Danny Elfman. But this is The Sound of Music. The Sound of Music won our musical category, best musical category. We started it. Did we finish? No, we didn't finish the animated. We finished the musicals here on the show. And The Sound of Music ends up winning out. And but what it's seated at 8 because there were so many ahead of it that had multiple submissions. Whereas it, though it won, it only had the one submission. So it's our number 8 seated Sound of Music versus and it's the music of Irwin Kostel versus Pee-wee's Big Adventure, a score by Danny Elfman. Now, what's interesting here with The Sound of Music is a lot of the orchestral music you're going to hear are versions of the music that is in that is being sung, the songs that are sung in the movie. But there is something to be said for using those songs and adding to the feel of the film when there's no singing to be done, but you need a musical accompaniment to what's happening. So let's just listen to the overture. I mean, that's a great place to start, and we're going to let this breathe a little bit. This is the overture of Sound of Music. So you can hear in this, you can hear the different songs that are sung. You know, that's what an overture should do. It kind of gives you a preview of what you're going to hear coming up in a musical, or in a lot of times in these older movies, there would be just an overture of the music of the film that's coming up. And but then the way these things were woven in other places. So this is from the Grand Waltz. And obviously it's a few of my favorite things. But it's turned into that waltz, you know, the 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. And there are a few like this. There are a few waltzes throughout the film that take these songs that are sung and waltz them up, basically. This is Escape. This is from, you know, the one of the more intense moments. But it's interesting the music they use that Kostel chooses to use here. So you can hear the freneticness of what's going on. He incorporates "So Long, Farewell" into this, and then when it gets kind of quieter and a little more tense, he'll even bring in a few of my favorite things, and that's kind of throughout. It actually goes back into a reprise of "Climb Every Mountain," and then you get into the big finale from all of this. So and then finally there's the end titles, you know, just to kind of get a flair of what's. And this is a terrible recording. This is from Amazon Music, but you can hear it's kind of distorted. And so he uses the Hills Are Alive, the Sound of Music there. So that are just some selections from the orchestral pieces of The Sound of Music. It is iconic. It is classic. It is the feel of it is classic. It is classic movie orchestra. You know, there's not a lot negative that can be said about it. It stood the test of time, you know. Obviously it's a, you know, it's a musical that everyone, that even people who have not seen it all the way through, they know, you know, different parts of this music. Even if all they know is "Doe, a deer, a female deer," they may not know where it came from. They may think "The Hills Are Alive with the Sounds of Music" comes from European Vacation, you know. So, but it's there. It's been referenced in pop culture again and again and again. And that is pitted against a very, honestly, at the time, it was not niche at all. But I feel like as time has worn on, it's become very niche. And of course, with the passing of Paul Rubens, I think it'll really move into to even more and more niche as time rolls on. And that is Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And this is the first score on the board featuring Danny Elfman. Now, we featured some of his scores in our previous episode. I think we had Batman and we had Spider-Man 2 was the one that was actually submitted. And I can't think, we'll have a couple here that actually make, that will, you know, given time, we'll get to on this episode. Let's start. This is Pee-wee's Big Adventure. We'll start with the old breakfast machine, the Rube Goldberg way of starting breakfast in the morning. Look, does this take me back? It sure does. I don't know when the last time I saw Pee-wee's Big Adventure was, but I remember the breakfast machine. I remember him sitting down after all of that, sitting down with cereal and being like, Mr. T cereal, I pity the fool that don't eat my cereal. And the mad dog, rabid dog. When he's so all of this stuff is very, but it also has that over the top, you know, Pee-wee Herman feel. This is Park Ride. On his bicycle. The use of the xylophone and everything, you know, feels like an old children's television show. You know, it feels like it feels like what it's supposed to. And that doom, 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 just that rhythmic piano that's going there, as well as, you know, there are times where it feels like a classical orchestra and it feels like they're going into the, and I can't remember, is it Bring Out the Clowns? Anyhow, that's what it feels like. Pee-wee had his bike stolen in this movie. And you hear the variation on what was done in the breakfast and what was done a little bit in the park. Almost a horror theme kind of thing because of the high strings. I mean, it sounds... And look, and it should, because there's nothing more... In the 80s, there was nothing more horrific to a kid than the thought of having their bike stolen. Every movie has to have a love interest, and this is Simone's theme. Come on, Simone, let's talk about your theme. This feels so much like Twin Peaks. Mm-hmm. That makes me uncomfortable. I mean, look, I don't know that I'm a fan of Danny Elfman. I think he obviously has more talent musically than I do. This is the finale, by the way. And it's just that big, frenetic kind of thing. The thing about Elfman is sometimes his music makes me feel weird. You know, I appreciate what he did with Batman in 1989. I kind of appreciate a little bit what he did with Spider-Man later on, but there's not a lot. You know, he worked a lot with Tim Burton, and a lot of his stuff kind of makes me feel the way this does. Like, that Simone theme really kind of gives me the willies a little bit, but I can't deny that it is part of pop culture in a lot of ways, and there are a lot of people who love what Elfman does. But to my ears, it's not a lot to me. So I will say this, though. A surprising score of Elfman's, it's not going to be a surprise to anyone who listens to this show at all, but his Hulk score is actually interesting. He gets outside of what his usual tricks are with the Hulk score. Not the Incredible Hulk, that was Craig Armstrong, but Ang Lee's Hulk. Elfman did the score for, and he kind of gets out of his usual bag of tricks, and it's really interesting to see what he does. So I would check that out. So, all right. So here we go. Saber Dance is what I'm thinking of. Thank you, DF Music. Thank you so much. Saber Dance. Sabre Danse. Are we going Sound of Music or Pee Wee? Now listen, understand something. I know that Julie Andrews is a queen. I get that. I know that she is a classic, wonderful, glorious singer. That's not really what we're looking at when we look at the scores of these films. We're looking at the orchestral work that was done. So that's why we didn't play Tequila with Pee-wee's Big Adventure, because it's not part of the orchestral score. So the voting is now open. We now open the floor for votes, and you vote simply by putting in the chat Sound of Music. You may say SOM or Pee-wee. You can say Pee-wee. You can say Pee-wee's Big Adventure. You can say PW. You can say PWBA. Just say Pee-wee. That'll be easier. So Sound of Music or Pee-wee's Big Adventure is where we're at now as the voting comes in. And I've done this thing where I've messed up and I've scrolled up the chat to see what's been said, because Cody Murphy did not like that I'm calling him Cody Murphy. And I need to stop doing that if he doesn't like it, because I may one day need some legal advice from him. Looks like Sound of Music is running away with it. Pee-wee's got a couple of votes here from good old Puddings Bane. And who else voted for Pee-wee up at the top? Troy. Good old Troy voting for Pee-wee. Jeff Lane votes for Pee-wee. Lots of other votes for Sound of Music, though. So that's an interesting thing. These are the kind of matchups that happen. And so see what will happen now in round two. You're going to have the Lion King versus the Sound of Music, basically. And because we're going to go, I think we're, unless there's just a bunch of people who are either really lagging or just have no dog in this fight and they're just enjoying listening and they don't want to put anything in the chat. It looks like Sound of Music is going to win it. Erwin Kostel was involved with Fantasia. Huh. I remember doing Fantasia on the old Disney Vault Talk. So what will happen in round two is Lion King will take on Sound of Music, or Sound of Music will take on Lion King. And then all you people that love Lion King and love Julie Andrews are going to be in a bind. And that's what happens with these things. Ladies and gentlemen, we come to the time in the show where I now must apologize to my friend Shaz Bazaar. because in this point in the show, we have a score that was, it was, let me see, when, how much was this actually, how many times was this actually submitted? Because I think it's here because of multiple submissions in the other category. Yes, two submissions. It is The Sting. And The Sting has orchestral arrangements by Marvin Hamlisch, of music by Scott Joplin. Now, here's something. This is where I've learned a little bit, and this is where I owe Shaz Bazaar an apology. So if everyone will indulge me for just a moment. Shaz Bazaar, you and I have been friends for many years now. We've opened Tron cards together. We've broken bread together. We've exchanged little gifts here and there. We've visited one another's homes. You've been on the podcast. Shaz, you submitted two scores that I rejected outright early on in the proceedings. One was Amadeus, and the other was My Immortal Beloved. I rejected those scores outright because they were the works, the scores were comprised of the works of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and Ludwig von Beethoven. Is it Ludwig von Beethoven? Ludwig. Is it von Beethoven? Ludwig. Yeah, Ludwig von Beethoven. Thank you. I think the music is over almost. I'll just have to replay it. I rejected those outright because they weren't original scores. They were music by those two composers. And I thought to myself, self, who can stand against Ludwig von Beethoven and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart? Also, we're looking for original scores by these composers for these movies. At the time, I didn't really know what... I've never seen The Sting. Obviously, I know the song The Entertainer. I did not realize that the music of The Sting is the music of Scott Joplin, the father of ragtime, who lived in the late 19th century, and it was adapted for the film by Marvin Hamlisch. I realized that just the other day, at 47 years old, sitting down to do the work to prepare for this show. And so, Shaz, I've been a hypocrite, and I rejected your suggestions outright and have broken my own rules and did not amend those things because, quite frankly, I just wanted to get this over with. Mediocrity won the day. And for that, I apologize. Billy Dee played Scott Joplin in a 1977 film. I think it's titled Scott Joplin. And that is not The Sting. The Sting is a movie starring some people. And it has the iconic, and it is iconic, song played that's called The Entertainer. And you will recognize it right out of the gate. This is Marvin Hamlisch's adaptation of Scott Joplin's The Entertainer from the movie The Sting. Thank you. strangely enough, the Joplin movie came out after this movie had been released. So, interesting. Billy Dee Williams played Scott Joplin. Did I mention that? So we know the entertainer. We know this song. It's worked its way into the American culture. And there's a couple more here. This is the Pineapple Rag / the Gladiolus Rag from The Sting. A lot of ragtime music is what this... Ladies and gentlemen, Cody Murphy has left the chat. We're still here going at it, though. That is the Pineapple Rag / Gladiolus Rag from The Sting. And finally, we'll play one more piece of good old ragtime music from this film. It's called The Glove. Now, I got to tell you, that one is so much fun to me because it sounds like it's come straight out of the Muppet Show. The Muppets had that kind of little horn going, that muffled horn going a lot of times and stuff, especially when they do the dance, sketches and that sort of thing. Surprisingly enough, Danny Elfman shows up again in a battle against this classic film and this score that is Scott Joplin music. As orchestrally arranged by Marvin Hamlisch, but it is up against this movie that is now officially, I think, getting a sequel, I believe. Does not matter. This is the music of Danny Elfman from the film Beetlejuice. We're coming into the main titles a little bit here. So that's the main titles, and you hear that doom, 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 doom. I mean, that classic Danny Elfman kind of rhythm thing going on. It's a little more electronic with what's happening here, so that's fun. But this is a second track from that. It's travel music. Thank you. a lot of fun little strings there. The harp's coming in. So that's, you know, that's nice. This is Enter the Family. And what I like about what he does there is, it obviously this is a comedy. It's a, you know, it's a dark comedy in a lot of ways, but that's still a comedy. But there is the feeling. Some of the music, you know, harkens back to some 80s type horror movies too. Some of the instruments and stuff that's being used. This is one of those times where I don't really know how to communicate what it is I'm trying to say about the, because I don't know what the instrument is, but it just sounds like something you'd hear in some of those. So this is Beetle Snake from the soundtrack. I tell you, Elfman does confusion and chaos well, for sure. And I'll tell you, just then I heard on what I believe to be clarinets, this descending thing, this do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Check out the whole score. Here's from the end credits, just to get a little bit of the flavor of everything again from Beetlejuice. That theme, which I remember from the Saturday morning cartoon. So there's some Elfman versus Scott Joplin, the father of ragtime versus Danny Elfman. Look, I appreciate Beetlejuice a lot more, I think, than I appreciate the Pee Wee soundtrack, but it's still that Danny Elfman, you know, kind of thing from that era. And he even pulled a lot of that kind of stuff out for his Batman score. When you get away from like the main Batman theme and then a little bit of what's going on in the finale of the first Batman, when you get into some of the battles and some of the stuff that's happening with the Joker and even with the Penguin and Catwoman and Batman Returns, you get that doom, 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 doom kind of thing that's going on there. I do think those scores are a little more sophisticated, is the wrong word. They're a little more superhero oriented, of course, than what the Beetlejuice thing is. You know, and so some of that's tamped down a little bit, but it's still there. So the vote is the Sting or Beetlejuice is where we're at. So Jeff Lane says I would have lost money if he'd bet me I'd have voted for Elfman once, let alone twice in a row. So you know, it's interesting. Beetlejuice is a different kind of thing. You know, obviously, there's a little bit more of a story there. What Pee-wee is doing with the Elfman score is more, it is more about, you know, the kids and big and loud and silly. And so he does that. And here the silly is a little bit dark to it. So, we've got Beetlejuice, and Ghoster Drew says, oh no, he's been summoned. That's true. I didn't think about that. Oh, good catch. Well played, Drew. Appreciate you bringing that to the table tonight. It does look like it's going to be Beetlejuice. So interesting, because depending on this next matchup, it could get crazy up in here. So it's the Blondie one way or another rhythm. Yeah, one way or another, I'm going to find you. I'm going to get you one way. Okay, so I think we've got time to do this one. Again, I told them there'd be some bleed over with me and the Deuce cast when they're ready, and I've not yet received the invite that I need to join in with the Deuce cast. When I do, you, ladies and gentlemen, will be joining in with me for just the briefest of moments. So we are, let's see, which battle is that? What number battle is that? So that's 1, 2, 3, and this will be 4. So that's good. Halfway through round one is where I like to stop. It's going to take forever to get to the top. That's all I got. Here we go. The number 4 seed. And again, this is one. Look, I'll be honest about something here. Why wouldn't I be honest? Let me just say, I've not been lying. I would like to make an observation and tell you what I feel in my heart has happened. With Back to the Future over in the sci-fi category, and with Ghostbusters here in the comedy slash other category, I think that there's some confusion. Number one, I know we all know the Back to the Future score, the theme, and I think that's one, because to find the actual score was a little bit hard for old Steve to track down the Back to the Future 1 score. With Ghostbusters, I think that there may be, you know what? I should retract all this, because after some of the voting that went on and some of the comments that I saw in some of the voting, I think people do know what they're voting for. Sometimes I think they're voting for the movie rather than the score. That's fine. You know, that's not the rules, but I don't know your heart. But I feel like what we've got here is a situation where people are remembering the songs from the movie a little bit more than the fullness of the music from the movie. And that's what we have here with Ghostbusters. And another apology, because it's going up against Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And I really thought, I'm like, well, I know that everyone knows I'm a man of constant sorrow from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But surely there's a score that goes along with it that's a little... But no, it's just a lot of bluegrass music. And here's my thing. I'm almost ready to go executive on this, and I want to just go ahead and give Ghostbusters the win. But we will continue to turn it over to the chat. But know where my heart is, and know that my vote, if I step in to vote, my vote counts as 10, or 20, or however many I need to win. So that's where we're at. So here we go. DF Music has the Entrada release of Back to the Future or Ghostbusters? I actually have the Entrada release of Back to the Future, and I have the whole Elmer Bernstein score of Ghostbusters as well. So Let's get into it. This is now Elmer Bernstein is a classical composer. Elmer Bernstein at this point in his life had been around for a couple of decades doing stuff, and so he was no stranger to cinema. And it's really interesting to see the kind of scores. Like, I think he did some westerns and stuff, and it's really fun to see that and compare it to this. But look, this is a fun score. This is Ghostbusters, and this is what Mr. Bernstein called the actual Ghostbusters theme. So let's get a listen to this. Nope, that's not it. And so it's very circusy, it's very jaunty, you know, but it is their theme, and that this kind of plays throughout, and it'll play a little spookier, it'll play a little more lighthearted, it'll play a little darker, but then he's got some other things that he weaves through here that are, you know, you're going to recognize them when you hear them from moments in the film, like the library. So I don't know if that's like a pan flute. I'm not sure if those are chimes or what's being played there. Glockenspiel of some sort. That's a Glockenspiel. I think it's. But it, you get the spookiness. You get the kind of foreboding that dun, dun kind of thing from him, and it's really good. This is the fridge. Just hear how you hear it winding up. Just foreboding, like in a comedy now, you know. Very electronic sounding here. You've got that instrument in the background that really does sound like a theremin, but I think that our friend David in the chat is telling us that it's an Ondes Martinet, which I don't really know what that is, but it is it is spooky. It is, you know, and this is Dana's theme, by the way. I want to make sure we hear this. Thank you. I like the fun in that. I like the lightheartedness. I like the way it you know, kind of goes into a nice little love theme for Dana. I won't be playing Meeting/I Respect You that has the big orchestral thing at the end where Bill Murray's, you know, there at the fountain and he's watching the mimes and all and the skaters spin around. So he kind of does sticks his arm out and does the same thing. But that's a great piece of music. You get to We Got One. The build up to it and everything. And this kind of has that those horns kicking in. It's almost like a Western. But then you get the drum set coming in with it. And you're like, okay, these are the cowboys of the 80s. These are the Ghostbusters going into adventure. Here we go. Kick it in now, Elmer. I love the use of the theme there like that. And this gets a little lost in the actual film because I think they play the cleaning up the town when she says we got one and they get to moving. So it's just a fun piece of music as well. And then you got Trap. This is the first time and you hear that. You hear the use of that theme in there. And it almost Mickey Mouse's those guys sticking their head out of the three curtains because it, you know, it's the theme three times and now we're slowing into it. We're trepidatious about where we're going with the trap and everything. So fun stuff. Let me get to my actual timestamp that I meant to get to with this one, by the way. This is still Trap. And so you hear there's synthesizer being used. There's And you're at that moment. Is this going to work? Don't look directly at the trap. I looked at the trap, Ray. We get him? Are you in there? So good stuff. And then, as I said, there's other stuff. There's the ghost. It's a great, listen, this is a score that I've had for a while. Don't really listen to it a lot, but I was really enjoying it as I was listening through to try to find some highlights and stuff. There's a lot good in the Ghostbuster score by Elmer Bernstein. Now, that is up against Man of Constant Sorrow and some other things. I tried to pick some instrumental pieces off of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And I'm sorry, I know I am really loading the category here. And I know someone sent in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? A couple of you, I think, did. Let me look and see. I think what happened is we got down to 15 on this without me realizing in this category. And Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Just was there. It hadn't been eliminated through any other thing. And so T-Bone Burnett is who I saw as being like the composer, but I could not find actual original instrumental music. And so I don't want to, this is all I got is what I'm saying. And so, you know, if you want to email and complain, email Scott@rifen.com and he will handle all of your complaints about the way this was handled. So that's Scott@rifen.com and make sure that that you let us know how we've messed up. So this is the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack score. This is an instrumental version of Man of Constant Sorrow. Thank you. Coen Brothers movies are interesting because they're really, you're going to get different types of scores and everything that goes on with some of these things. But another film that was submitted that didn't make the cut was True Grit. And that is very old-timey, like stand-up piano, really a bunch of hymns that get used in the score for that, which it's really a good, I enjoy it a lot. It fits the feel and everything. And then in the bigger moments, it swells up to some other stuff. This doesn't really ever do that. You know, you get a lot of this stuff, the different instrumental versions of things. I love it. I like just sitting there listening to that. Like, I want to go ride the Blue Ridge Parkway and have these things going. You know, it's not bad music. You know, it's not something I'm going to listen to all the time. But it was definitely for that. It fit Oh Brother, Where Art Thou incredibly well. You know, and a lot of the songs, you know, where they're, let's go down to the river. I went down to the river to pray. You know, that kind of stuff is some really good stuff. The Tishomingo Blues. So good stuff, you know, bluegrass. I have no problem with bluegrass. I just don't know that it holds up to Elmer Bernstein. And so that's why I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, tonight for this final matchup on the tournament for this particular episode, your vote, Ghostbusters or Brother? So I know where I stand on this matter. And my vote counts for 10. And so hopefully we'll all be on the same page when things go, when the voting begins here in a moment. Elmer Bernstein, great composer, classic composer. I enjoy Oh Brother, Where Art Thou as a film. I think that it's great stuff and worthy of enjoyment and that sort of thing, but I just don't know. Even had I been able to find a score in some stuff, I don't know that it would have stood up to the score of Ghostbusters. I don't appreciate right now my wife saying Brother. She knows that I'm for Ghostbusters, and she has now put in the chat for Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. That makes no sense to me. I feel like some people are voting for the movie they like better, not the score. If that were the case, there's a lot of scores that would still be in this battle that are not, if that were me doing it. So just know that's how we go. Gosling Brothers. So, all right. I think the Ghostbusters are going to take it down. According to the listener vote here live. So get your bracket at geekoutonline.com and go mark these as winners and move them on. Lion King over Police Academy. Sound of Music beats Pee-wee's Big Adventure. There's an upset. Beetlejuice beat The Sting. And Ghostbusters has beaten Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. Now, here's what's really interesting. When we get to round two, Beetlejuice and Ghostbusters, that'll be kind of an interesting showdown. On the next episode, we'll finish out, Lord willing, round one of the Comedy and Other Division. And we'll get into round one, Lord willing, of the Drama Thriller Division. And so look forward to that. Hopefully our friend David will be with us, DF Music 64 in the chat, and we'll have a grand old time. Until then though, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at geekoutonline@gmail.com. geekoutonline@gmail.com, unless you are complaining. If you're complaining about the results of some things, then we encourage you to email Rifen or Scott at Rifen.com. And I know that he will help you with the issues that you have if you get in touch with him. Right now we are heading in to join up with I believe the Deuce Cast, where I will be appearing on their show whenever they put it out there. So to everyone else, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for being a part of Geek Out Loud. Don't forget to check out the Deuce Cast with my good friend Michael Nipp and Dave Dollar. And when I'm there, we're gonna talk about apparently wrestlers that have been in movies. The email, geekoutonline@gmail.com, the Patreon, patreon.com/geekoutloud, mixer.com/geekoutloud is where we go live when we record. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you on the next Geek Out Loud.
Steve, get us out of here.
Hopefully we're not coming in on your recording, Steve, because that would be awesome if we were.
Oh, yeah, I just wrapped up the show. I'm sorry, what just happened?
No, you joined us as you were wrapping up your show, so I'm hoping our voices were not on your recording.
Well, I was hoping they would be, but I had my music going too loud.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah. So,
hey, well, I did say Steve wrap us up at the very end there.
Yeah. That's true. You did say
get,
Steve wrap
Steve
us
get
up.
Us, Steve, get us
Steve,
out of here. That's
Steve, get us out of here. Yeah, exactly.
Well, hey, everyone, thanks for having me. Have we started the show yet?
No.
Oh,
well, we're always recording, but this
we're
is
always
just
recording.
The filler,
yes, ABC, ABR, ABC, ABR.
D's nuts. What?
No. always be recording. No, I was talking about the General Grievous Jar Jar Binks double Funko Pop that I bought because I thought it was a weird combination.
That is a weird combination. Yeah, that is a weird combination.
So,
by the way, welcome to the Geek Out Loud After Show. I'm joined by David Dollar and Michael Nipp of the Deuce Cast. So glad to have you guys on, and so glad for you to have me on your show. Thank you so much.
And welcome to the Deuce Cast movie show Stinger, which happens after we play a little Casey Kasem countdown. Go right into whatever we record before and after the show goes into the Stinger. Always a delightful
Is this what
little
it feels like
fun.
To be in the movie Inception? I feel like this is Inception right now.
I should let you know I am recording now. So
I mean, we're recording.
That's
too.
Fine. Yeah,
I never listen. I never stopped, guys.
Hey, I'm the captain now.
look at me.